Hey, everybody, it's Trags, and this week on Red Sox Beat, I welcome in Jen McCaffrey covering the Red Sox, doing an awesome job covering the Red Sox, I might add, for The Athletic. She is a must-read and a must-follow, of course, on Twitter, at JC McCaffrey. That's JCMCAFFREY. How you doing, Jen?
Good, Trags. How you doing?
I couldn't be better. Life is treating me well. My daughter's treated me to a great Father's Day remotely. They are back in Boston. I'm here in, of course, the Cincinnati area. But it was a wonderful Father's Day, so I cannot complain.
Awesome. That's good. Yeah. That's good to hear.
Yeah, I'm very, very happy. It looks like you are loving life right now with the scenery in the backyard.
Yeah, I have a little more space. I'm at my parents' house, so taking care of the family dog while they're on a little trip. So got a lot more space than I do up in Boston, so I figured I'd take advantage of it.
There is a lot going on in the Red Sox world right now. The Red Sox, as we record this, are a half game ahead of the Tampa Bay Rays. Of course, the team they'll be facing in a huge three-game showdown at the Trop this week down in St. Pete. Red Sox are 43-29, and that's one loss better than the 43-30. And struggling Tampa Bay Rays, they're going through quite the spell right now. They've lost six in a row. So while the Red Sox lost 2 of 3 over the weekend, Jen, disappointingly so, I think, to Kansas City. As you point out in your Athletic article on Monday, they're still in really good shape.
Yeah, I think especially going into a series like this, Tampa Bay is always, for the longest time, even when they weren't good, been a really tough competitor for the Red Sox. So, heading into this week with the Rays beat up a little bit, to be honest, is probably not a bad thing from the Red Sox perspective. The Red Sox are dealing with a couple of injuries themselves, and they're not exactly sure where they're going to stand with Christian Arroyo and Kevin Plecky. But far, far better than where the Rays are, having lost, I think, like 4 walk-off losses in their last 5 games and 6 straight losses. So they're really reeling right now. From the Red Sox side of things, if they can kind of go in there and maybe take advantage of that, they probably will want to.
A walk-off grand slam on Sunday against Seattle. They are really going through a spell that is going to test their depth. And one thing they also lost, or could be losing, their ace, Tyler Glasnow. He has suffered, as you wrote, a partially torn UCL and will be shut down for at least 4 weeks and probably more. Look, the Rays are looking for a spark, and what better spark than to dip into their minor league pool and bring up the number one prospect, not only in their organization, but MLB.com rates Wander Franco, the switch-hitting infielder, as the best prospect in baseball over the last 2 seasons. He is expected to be called up Tuesday and start against the Red Sox.
Yeah, that's going to be another thing to kind of watch in this series. You know, aside from the fact these two teams are separated by a half game for the division lead, is that the top prospect in all of baseball is going to be potentially making his debut. This has been a storyline people throughout baseball have been kind of following for a couple years now, because he is that good and he's been up there, and when are they going to call him up? When are they going to call him up? There was a point earlier in the year where the Rays had a couple injuries and people were wondering, is this when Franco's going to debut? So it's happening now against the Red Sox. So Red Sox fans are going to get a chance to see what this kid can do. That's another layer to just another kind of a pretty intense series that's kind of on schedule for this week.
I always like these series for some reason with Tampa, because like you said earlier, Jen, the Rays have a way of testing the Red Sox that other teams don't. They look at, for years, Chaim Bloom was in charge down there, and he knows Tampa better than anybody, obviously, inside the Red Sox organization. But the way the Rays test the Red Sox through speed and usually defense, and obviously great pitching and bullpen arms up the gazoo. They just have a way of really testing the Red Sox, don't you think?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, this is always a challenge, especially kind of going down there to Tropicana Field for the Red Sox. It's always a tough series for them. And the Rays look a little different this year pitching-wise. I mean, they've got Rich Hill, but, they didn't – they got rid of, they don't have Glasnow anymore. You know, they don't have Charlie Morton, who they had, you know, previously. You know, Michael Wach has kind of stepped in. They've got kind of a few different names in there that, you know, even a guy like Colin McHugh, who was actually with the Red Sox briefly last year, but was hurt. So yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting series for sure. They're very good defensively, so they're not going to make many mistakes. And we've seen the Red Sox, you know, that's kind of been one of their bugaboos is some of the defense sometimes. So yeah, I think these are going to be close, low scoring games and kind of grind it out type games for both sides, I think.
As you noted in your article for today, Monday, the bugaboo really got them on Sunday. Obviously, Nate Eovaldi didn't have his best, most efficient outing on the mound, but their defense kept Eovaldi out there exposed on the mound on a hot day in Kansas City. That kind of wore him down, and Eovaldi kind of noted that after the game. Not throwing anybody under the bus. He just, you know, in complimentary terms, the Red Sox did not play a very complimentary series over the weekend. That's really why they lost 2 or 3. But the collision between Kiki Hernandez and Christian Arroyo, looks like Arroyo could be out for at least a couple of days. But I'll say this about Chaim Bloom. One thing he did with the roster this year that I think people have touched on, but I haven't gone in depth about, is the versatility that they have. When you take a look at Kiki Hernandez's background and Christian Arroyo's background, they've both played multiple positions over their careers. And I think that's been a huge part of why Alex Cora, who knows how to manipulate a roster as well as anybody in baseball, that's one of the big reasons for their success, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and add Marwin Gonzalez to that mix too, because he's been all over the place as well. And yeah, really, you know, that's been key. And that's been one of the reasons they've, you know, for much of the season, you know, were allowed to go at 14 pitchers because they didn't need a big bench. You didn't need four bench guys. They could use those three bench guys because those guys could literally play anywhere, you know, except catcher or pitcher. So they were kind of covered everywhere. And when you do have these injuries, you know, we don't really know exactly what the extent of Arroyo's injury is, a bone bruise, but you know, how deep that is, if he'll be able to just skip a game or so, or if he'll need an IL stint. But yeah, just having that kind of versatility to kind of mix guys in and mix guys around has really kind of just helped sustain them a lot throughout the season, and you know, moving guys around any way that they can. So that's been, yeah, I think that was part of Bloom's plan in the winter, to kind of add these types of guys so they could keep this roster pretty flexible. And I think also knowing that they might need more pitching and an extra pitcher in a year where you know, they're coming off a 60 game season and weren't sure, you know, the durability of some guys, you know, Eduardo Rodriguez, you know, and his COVID issues in the past. Or so, yeah, I think there was a plan to all this. And, you know, so far, you know, what is it, late June, it's worked out for them. We'll see if it kind of continues. But I think, yeah, it'll be tested this week if some of those guys are down.
Speaking with Jen McCaffrey, doing a wonderful job covering the Red Sox for The Athletic. Hey, sports fans, Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Baseball season in full swing, and you can track all of the action at Bet Online. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all of your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and don't forget all of your UFC MMA action. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It is the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Before the next pitch, head on over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and take advantage of the 50% welcome bonus on your very first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on all of the action. Don't forget to use that promo code CLNS50 to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. You're an avid runner, aren't you, Jen?
I am. I went for a run this morning.
Oh, good. You feel energized? Is that why you look so fresh and ready to go on this terrific Red Sox?
I took a shower. I got ready. You know, maybe that's why I look a little fresh, but.
You always look fresh. You always look ready to go. The reason I ask is I think you post some of the best shots from the both sides of the Charles, actually, after you go for a run, and you take a lot of pride in doing that, I think.
Thank you. Yeah. I love that area. Yeah. I love running over there. It's such a, I don't know, it's like one of my favorite parts of the city. So, yeah, I've always, I feel like I'm always inclined to take a good photo over there, depending, no matter what the season is.
I always ask Brad for this, but you run the marathon?
I never have. Yeah. I've done a few half marathons. I've never done a marathon. I'm maybe someday we'll see. I've done like 4 half marathons. So
That's one more half marathon than I've ever run. So I give you credit on that. Red Sox pitching. Jen McCaffrey, The Athletic, covering the Red Sox for The Athletic. Look, I've had the aforementioned Rob Bradford on, Ian Brown. I've had Will Fleming last week, Red Sox play-by-play broadcaster. The area of the Red Sox staff, the roster that concerns me, is not even the bullpen. It's the rotation. And I just don't know if this rotation is going to hold up for the second half of the season. Everything else about this team, I think, is a playoff caliber roster, no question. But when you get to the rotation, I have my concerns.
Yeah, you know, and that's actually interesting you say that, because we were talking with Cora the other day and just asking about, you know, the rotation and if, you know, how things are looking, and especially with Tanner Houck coming back from the flexor strain. He pitched three yep. really strong innings on Thursday in Worcester, and he's going to start pretty much every fifth day from now on. Cora was asked about that and kind of what the rotation looks like in the second half. And he mentioned that, you know, there is the possibility they might, you know, call up Houck and kind of stretch guys out, give guys an extra day, knowing, you know, that the last year, you know, the shortened season last year, and knowing that the second half could be ripe for injuries. So trying to be mindful of that. So you could kind of go into the second half with a 6-man rotation and Chris Sale coming back. So, I mean, right now it is a situation that you have to keep an eye on, especially, you know, the past week or so, the rotation has been pretty rough. And not as solid as they were earlier in the year. I think as the season progresses and guys kind of hit that point in the year where they're already starting to get fatigued, adding in maybe a Tanner Houck and, you know, maybe Chris Sale sometime in August or, you know, end of August would absolutely be a boon. But I also wouldn't be surprised if Bloom, you know, tries to pick somebody up at the deadline. And I don't think it's going to be, you know, Max Scherzer. I don't think they're going to, you know.
That's the name every Red Sox fan would want, though, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, everybody looks at the big names, but Heim hasn't done those moves. And why would he right now? I mean, this is, they're trying to, you know, keep the farm system growing, and they're trying to, you know, win with what they kind of with what they have type thing right now this year. And I think adding kind of like a mid-tier guy, or maybe someone, you know, that you've heard of but maybe is on the rebound type thing is a way that they might go. I think they're probably gonna wait a few more weeks, obviously, until things maybe start to pick up a little bit more. But I could see something like that. Yeah, something like that kind of addition happening. But again, keeping in mind that Tanner Houck and Chris Sale are sort of, you know, right there too. So
yeah, those are two names, obviously, every Red Sox fan is going to keep their eyes on the next couple of weeks. But to me, the linchpin has to be the improvement of E-Rod. Eduardo Rodriguez has to be better than 5-4 with a 6.21 ERA. And what's his whip? 1.47. That's got to improve. He's got to get the walks down, and he's got to be more consistent with the fastball around the corners.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, we've asked Cora so many times, you know, what's going on here? And, you know, he just wants him to kind of attack more and to, you know, like you said, throw that fastball, you know, not just keep spotting, but, you know, throw it and pitch in counts where he needs to, and just be more aggressive. He's been a little, it seems like he's kind of been too timid, I guess, in big situations and hasn't been able to come through, and, you know,
outthinking himself. It's like
that's always been something. Yeah,
right. Like, he has to throw his off speed or his breaking pitch to get guys off his fastball. Well, you don't have to get guys off the fastball if they're not catching up on it and it's got late life, and that's what E-Rod has always had with his fastball.
Right. Yeah, it seems like he's not trusting what he has right now, and you know, he's kind of, like you said, overthinking it and kind of just getting in his own head in a lot of ways. You know, and you're also just kind of curious, is this, you know, fatigue from last year? Is there something else that's kind of creeping in? I don't think, obviously, the Red Sox would throw him out there if they were worried about anything like that. But at the same time, you know, we don't really know too much about the after effects of myocarditis. So I think there's just a lot of different factors going on. But honestly, yeah, the number one thing that it seems like is that he's just not being aggressive enough in situations where he needs to be.
All right, let's move on to a pet peeve. You know me well enough and long enough to know that I love to rant occasionally, right?
I do know
that about me. So
one or two rants before.
One of my rants about Major League Baseball, and I understand they're trying to get pictures to conform, get everybody to conform and enforce the rules already on the books. But this whole idea, which starts today, of reinforcing or doubling down on the efforts to ban foreign substances off the ball, bothers me because of not so much their efforts to get pictures to not cheat, but it's when this is coming. It's coming in the middle of the season, and you're asking umpires to police something that I think they don't have an idea going into how they're going to do it. And will it be uniform across baseball, which is another huge issue. And when you do this midstream, like Major League Baseball is trying to pull off, this to me is going to be wrought with problems in terms of mechanics and procedure. And that's not what MLB needs now. And my other big issue with this, I think it's going to cause pitchers to look for other ways to cheat, and because that's what's going to happen. If you take something away on one end that is known, you're going to get something on the other end that's maybe not as known to baseball. And I just think they're asking for trouble doing this in the middle of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it feels like they're trying to like overcompensate for, you know, people, this kind of coming into the public eye. You know, I think people knew that this kind of stuff was around, maybe not to the extent, you know, the spider tack and the kind of the how aggressive that use was and how much, you know, how sticky, to be honest, that stuff is. But people knew that, you know, guys were using sunscreen and rosin and mixtures of things. And that's kind of just been a thing that was one of those, you know, not unwritten rule, but one of those things that people, you know, guys had been doing for years. And I mean, you know, I think maybe some people took it too far with using this stuff like spider tech that made it that much harder across the game for offense, you know, for players to even just hit the ball because you know, spin rates were so high. But it feels like, you know, MLB was, you know, trying to jump ahead of the curve and be like, see, we're taking care of this one. We didn't take care of, you know, steroids back in the day, but we're taking care of this and we're going to crack down.
Or video.
Like, right. Exactly. Like, hold on. This is like, you know, midseason. And like, you know, I think it was Glasnow a couple weeks ago said that, you know, he had been using the sunscreen and rosin, he was saying, and he didn't use it. And the next start, he had, you know, pain in his elbow and in his forearm because he had to grip the ball harder because the ball itself is slippery. And that's what led to this, you know, shutdown for him. So I think we're going to see a lot more of that. And I think MLB is going to have to, you know, deal with that. And, you know, you don't want guys cheating, but at the same time, there's maybe a better way to go about policing this, or, you know, maybe in the off season, like you mentioned, or I don't know. I feel like every time they try to fix something, they just step on their own feet. And it is going to be interesting to see how pitchers handle this, how teams handle this. And like you said, you know, we were talking to Jason Varitek the other day and asking him about it. And he was saying, well, we kind of have some other ideas of how we're going to handle this. And, you know, we don't want to divulge too much for competitive advantage. So does that mean that they're trying something else that might eventually be illegal? Like, I don't know.
Okay. I was a catcher, and I would always tell my pitcher, make sure you rub up the balls good when they come, when an umpire goes over to the screen, even in a high school game, and says, we need a new batch of balls, bring them in. Make sure you rub them up so you have a grip. The other thing people are forgetting, and I had Rob Dibble on a couple of weeks ago, the seams have decreased on these baseballs with the express purpose of pitchers not getting the ability to throw breaking balls as easily as like they do in Japan. I'm sure you've heard of that, Jen, where you talk to enough players and enough pitchers who have pitched over in Japan or even hit in Japan, and the seams there are much more raised. Here in the States, in MLB, they're not. And that's why pitchers really went to try and find different ways to get the grip, because it's not all about necessarily the spin. Certainly that's a major part of it, but it's also about the grip, so the grip, you can throw a breaking ball.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, well, yeah, Hirokazu Sawamura was talking a lot about, you know, in spring training, just how different the baseball is, you know, from here in Japan. And I don't think people talk enough about the lack of uniformity in the actual baseball itself. It's so ridiculous. Yeah, that they're playing with something, a ball that is different year to year, you know, and different, you know, in the minor leagues, different in Japan. And it's just, it's ridiculous that they don't regulate this more, and like that they didn't think that that would have, you know, as drastic of an effect.
That's the fact that it drives me that shit about this story. It's just, it's so wrought with so many hypocrisies.
They could solve the whole problem by having like a better baseball, but they're not. I don't know. It's just a very weird.
And yes, you have, in a lot of cases, Jen, and you know this, you have non-baseball people, you have administrators making decisions about the competition.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the only sports where that really does happen, because in a lot of cases, you have, certainly there are former players in the commissioner's office and advising him, I get that. But the impression, the optics of the story is you have, you know, Rob Manfred and, you know, his administrative staff making decisions on the competitive nature of the game on the field without any, you know, comprehension of what they're doing might impact the way the game's being played, and for the umpires officiating.
Right. Yeah. It just, it feels like they're, you know, they sweep in and are like, oh, this is what we're going to do. And there's so many other aspects that could or should be changed. And you're talking about, yeah, rubbing up the baseballs, but like, the balls apparently aren't even rubbed. They used to be rubbed with like that special mud from the Delaware River. And apparently they don't even really use that anymore. And like, there's just so many, just the lack of uniformity in the actual freaking baseball that is like the point of, you know, playing the game is just like totally missed here. And it's, you know, the like the leather itself is a lot slicker this year. And it's crazy that they don't have just more of, like one way to make it, or one, you know.
You know what just popped into my head, and I covered the Patriots for many, many years, as you know, and I covered the Deflategate. You know what's going to what path they're going down here. You're going to have baseball eventually saying, well, the pitchers on the mound get to choose their balls when they're pitching, and the other pitchers get to choose their balls when they're pitching. And then you're going to say, well, they have to be sealed in a special room. And then when the umpires go in and check on the balls before every single game, they have to check them off. And that is the path you're going down. I guarantee you that's what you're approaching.
It's just making it way more complicated than it needs to be or it should be. And I don't know where it's going to go from here, but it's definitely to see how, the injuries creep up and how teams decide to handle this and how many more batters are potentially going to get hit because their players, the pitchers don't have grip.
And that's just a safety issue.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see. It's definitely going to be an interesting couple weeks here.
So one argument offered up by some pitchers in favor of the use of foreign substances is that, as you just mentioned, it will prevent injury by limiting the number of batters hit by pitches. However, the number of hits batsmen is higher than it's ever been, with the four highest hit by pitch rates since 1901, all coming in the past 4 years, suggesting that foreign substances used by pitchers are doing little to protect hitters. I don't know how to read that, actually. I don't know if pitchers are avoiding it or if they've changed the ball or necessarily how to read that stat. Here are some of the new protocols going into effect today. Starting pitchers will have more than one mandatory check per game. We don't need more delays, do we? And each relief pitcher must be checked either at the conclusion of the inning in which he entered the game or when he is removed from the game, whichever comes first. In general, inspections will be conducted between innings or after pitching changes to avoid a delay of game and to allow the umpire to perform a thorough check. Okay, whatever.
That's the other thing is the pace of play. Yeah, it's just, this is totally going to slow down games. And like, it's just going to, you know, that's another thing that MLB, you know, was harping on or trying to get better. And like, look, we're trying to make baseball better. And this is going to very much slow things down. So I don't know. It's going to, it's seemingly going to be a mess. And the fact that the Red Sox and the Rays, like, you know, have these intense battles playing this week, and the fact that they're kind of converging when the middle of all this is happening is going to be interesting to watch.
Okay. The use of foreign substances won't be reviewable by replay. Oh, great. Although foreign substance prohibitions do not apply exclusively to pitchers, the pitcher ultimately will be responsible for any ball that is delivered with a foreign substance on it. If you have somebody handling the ball, let's say a batter with pine tar on his glove.
I was just going to say that. Like, how do they know?
They don't.
Yeah.
Catchers will also be they don't once the ball leaves the field of play and are inspected by some third party. They have no idea.
Right.
Unless you're going to do fingerprints. Let's see. Catchers will also be subject to routine inspections. Again, umpires will also inspect a position player if they observe conduct consistent with the use of a foreign substance by a pitcher. A player who refuses to cooperate with an inspection conducted by the umpire will be presumed to have violated the rules. Obviously, we know there's a 10-game suspension, not without pay. They will get paid, but the team doesn't get to replace them on the roster.
Yeah, that's another thing that'll be interesting to watch. Yeah, I'll get teams being down a guy. So, yeah.
And one of my big, we need more Trevor Bowers in baseball. I have said that for the longest time. And his tweet, did you see the video tweet of his last week?
I think I did. I'm trying to remember now.
He rubbed rosin and some type of watery liquid substance, whatever. Puts the ball, let's see, do I have a ball here? I do not. But he puts the ball right here. And then he lets it go and it sticks. And he says, poll, quick poll, is that legal or not? And it was with rosin. And sweat, whatever, that would be totally legal. And he had the ball sticking to his hand, holding it up.
Yeah.
And I just love Trevor Bauer because he's not afraid to expose kind of the hypocrisy and the lunacy of a rule like this being enforced in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
I feel so much better that I got that out of my system.
I'm glad you did. I'm glad this is a good venting session for you. I feel like this is a good way to start your week.
It is, Jen. Okay, one more question for you, and I'll let you go. And that is, we spoke of Wander Franco for the Rays, the top prospect in baseball. Jaron Duran, a lot of Red Sox fans are clamoring for him. I don't know if they necessarily need him, but here's my feeling on the numbers he's putting up, which are pretty tremendous. Let's see if I can draw them up here. He's got 12 home runs. He's hitting north of 300 for Worcester. And I do not understand why, here it is. He's hitting, 286. For his career, he's hitting 317 in the minor leagues. He's got 12 home runs this year for Worcester. He the first walk-off home run in Polar Park history on Sunday. He's got 24 RBIs. Is he coming up soon?
So soon, but as in like this week or soon?
Next month.
So the thing that complicates it all is that he's on the U.S. Olympic team.
Oh, right.
And good point. So they would play in Tokyo in late July, be done by like early August. You don't necessarily want to, you know, manage your roster around the Olympics. You know, obviously he's more of a Red Sox, you know, asset, and they should call him up whenever. But my other thought is that do they just, because it's, you know, only a few weeks away and like they don't, like you said, need, you know, someone, unless these injuries that we talked about, if Arroyo's down or, you know, Pulecki and they need to, you know, figure something out. Just bring him up in early August after the Olympics. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch. I feel like Bloom has been very, very patient with a lot of different guys and just kind of pumping the brakes on them. The other thing, and this is like more historically, not so much with Bloom in charge, but over the years, the Red Sox have called up their really top prospects when the team is on the road, kind of away from all the noise and fanfare of Fenway. And they do go to the West Coast that July 1st week. They're in like Seattle and Oakland or LA, I think. There's a possibility, you know, he gets called up that week, but I don't know. And I think unless there's a need, they're not going to call him up. And you could say, well, there's a need at leadoff. And, you know, I also just don't know that they want to slot him in like to the leadoff spot right away and be like, perform right away. Like, I don't know, those expectations are pretty hefty. And if he falters and, you know, doesn't get off to a good start, you know, just ask Bobby Dalbec how that, you know, how
he's come around. I mean, look, that argument sometimes, Jen, doesn't hold water for me, because if he's a major leaguer and he struggles at the start of his career and you have faith in him, you tell him, we have faith in you. Take your licks. And, you know, everybody remembers the first month of Dustin Pedroia's career, right? I mean, when he was, what, 2006, I think it was, or 2007, I always forget. I think it was 06. And he hit 183, whatever it was, for a month and a half. But Tito said, look, kid, you're not going anywhere. Just hang, you know, take the ups with the downs and vice versa, and you'll be okay.
And I think that, you know, that's obviously what Cora's done with Dalbec. They weren't planning to kind of move him, and he's kind of picked things up, and, you know, he'll probably drop down again and pick things back up again. And just as guys do in the beginning of their career until things even out. But I don't know. I just don't know if putting Duran into like the leadoff spot when they've had such
little production.
It's such a big role. And, you know, I don't know. I do wonder too how much his number at Polar Park seems to be an immensely friendly hitter friendly park with how many home runs they've had. So, you know, maybe those numbers are slightly inflated. So I don't know. I mean, he will be up. He'll be up by the end of the season. I just don't know if it's going to be like early July, or like they'll just be like, you know what, go play through the Olympics, play for Mike Socha in the Olympics on a really big stage with, you know, a lot of these veteran guys that are, you know, retired now, and then we'll call you up, and, you know, alongside Tristan Casas too, and then we'll call you up. So I don't know, I'm kind of leaning that way, but again, I wouldn't necessarily be surprised if it's early July. I kind of am waffling here, but
The other thing, Jen, sorry to cut you off there, but that's all I do on this podcast.
I mean.
The Red Sox are not a team that you would think would be too obsessed with starting the clock. I mean, there was a lot of talking back when Theo ran things about starting the clock, and the Red Sox wanted to be pretty careful about how they did that. But are they still concerned about when you start the major league clock on a player like that?
I think they're always mindful of it, but I mean, I think you know, I think at this point he's going to come up, you know, sooner than later. So, you know, what's a month really, or a month or 2 months, you know, or a month and a half. So I don't think that that's necessarily like a driving factor here. Now, if they were like, oh, we're not calling him up until, you know, April of next year, then you'd kind of be scratching your head like, that's, you know, what's going on there. But all indications are that he's going to be up at some point this summer, probably no later than like April 15th.
Right.
August 15th. August,
I knew what you meant. But the other thing to keep in mind is that's not necessarily for financial purpose. It is, but long-term, the reason you have to be mindful of the clock, as they call it, is service time and player control. How long does the team get an extra year of control of the player if they wait to call them up? And that's why this all matters.
Right.
So anything else on your plate?
Yeah, just that Tampa series, the Yankees this weekend. It should be a good baseball.
Revenge.
Yeah, first time Yankees are back at Fenway since 2019.
Yeah, long time. And obviously, last year they dominated the Red Sox. This year, the Red Sox got off to a dominating start against the Yankees.
Yeah, we'll see, you know, if that evens out this weekend or if they keep it up. So,
the Yankees are a mighty strange and difficult team to figure out.
They really are. I mean, yeah, you would think they'd be better than this. And, you know, a lot of times they have had slow starts and then they pick it up by this point in the season. But right now they're still kind of figuring things out. So maybe this is who they are, but I think the Red Sox want to be careful going into this weekend, not assuming they're going to, you know, have another sweep and then get swept. Cause I think that would be obviously a worst case scenario and pretty embarrassing for them. So then again, you know, it's going to probably be a taxing three games, you know, in Tampa. So I don't know. It's going to be an interesting week, you know, interesting six upcoming games either way.
Yeah, very much. Well, Jen, hopefully this, I intend on having you back. I hope you will accept my offer when I extend it in the near future to have you back on the Red Sox Beat podcast.
I will happily accept in the future.
You're the best, Jen. Want to thank everybody for downloading today's podcast. Thank our terrific guest, Jen McCaffrey, doing bang up work covering the Red Sox all year long for The Athletic. Follow her on Twitter at JC McCaffrey, all one word. That's JC McCaffrey. Also want to thank our terrific sponsor, betonline.ag. I'm Mike Petralia, and for Jen McCaffrey, this has been the Red Sox Beat podcast powered by CLNS Media.